everyone, Megan Marie here, Community Manager at Crystal Dynamics. Thanks for tuning in to the fourth official Crystal Habit podcast. Today's podcast has a slew of special guests, including the entirety of our audio department. As always, we'll end with a QA session with Carl to answer the month's most pressing questions. And like before, we'll have contest details at the very end. So enjoy. Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We've actually got the entire audio team here together at once, so it's going to be interesting. We've never had a setup with four individuals at a time. We'll try not to talk over each other. But they're ready to talk shop about Tomb Raider. So we have Alex Wilmer, who is our sound designer and audio engineer.
Hello. My name is Alex Wilmer, sound designer slash audio engineer.
slash aspiring radio voice.
Yes. Let me try that a little deeper.
We also have Carl Gallagher, who's our senior audio engineer.
Hey, everybody. I'm Carl Gallagher, senior slash audio slash engineer.
Yeah, his name always confuses me because we have a Carl Stewart, a Daryl Gallagher, and then a Carl Gallagher. And I think I made up like an amalgamation of all you three my first couple of weeks here.
We also had a Seamus Gallagher here also.
So confusing. There's not enough names in the world, evidently. And last but not least, we have Jack Grillo, who's our lead sound designer.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jack Grillo.
Jack Grillo.
Lead sound designer.
All right. Well, thank you guys for coming in. Why don't we start by explaining just a little bit about yourself? So, Alex, we can start with you and go in a nice little circle. When did you start in the industry, and like, what does your work here kind of entail?
I started about 6 years ago. I worked as a contractor, and I worked mostly in documentary films for about 4 years, but was working on some video game stuff, and that was my main focus at my previous company. I would work on music and sound design, and then
came over to Crystal.
Sorry,
then you came over to Crystal,
yeah, two years ago, roughly. And started working on Guardian of Light and did some implementation and sound design work for that, and that was a really fun project. Now I'm working on Tomb Raider, and that is an awesome project. I'm mostly working on the music for that, but also an unannounced project. Can I say that?
Yeah, we've talked about the fact that we have two unannounced projects.
Okay.
And also, you guys are the audio team, so I can make sure you guys can censor out anything. If you say anything you're not supposed to, I'll just like put elevator music and make the Tomb Raider fans mad. All right, how about you, Carl? When did you start in the industry, and what did you come onto Crystal to do?
The industry, I think I started about 2004, and I worked a little bit at EA testing on Sims 2, and then eventually went over to Crystal, I think kind of about 8 months afterwards. And started working on Project Snowblind, and then switched over to, what was after that? Tomb Raider Legend, and then did some sound design a little bit, but mostly implementation of the music and sound effects and VO and so on. And after that, I went to Tomb Raider Underworld, or actually, no, Anniversary was before that. Tomb Raider Anniversary, then Underworld. And then the two downloadable titles for Underworld. And then
the DLC.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And then...
And now Tomb Raider?
This one, yeah.
All right, awesome.
Tomb Raider, period.
And how about you, Jack?
I got started doing sound design about 16 years ago. I was working at a small independent sound design shop, and we mostly worked on really bad action movies. So did a lot of kung fu movies, a lot of... scary monster, octopus, shark attack kind of movies. That was really fun. And in those years, I probably worked there for about 5 years and did a good chunk of everything there, doing a lot of sound design, Foley recording, Foley mixing, mixing the entire film here and there. So I got an opportunity to kind of try my hand at a lot of different aspects of the sound design craft. And then in 2000, I moved over to work exclusively on video games at EA, which had EA Los Angeles, which had recently purchased DreamWorks. And we just, at that point, just finished releasing the first Medal of Honor. And so then my first three games were at EA, working on the Medal of Honor series. And that was a really great introduction to the game industry and to being able to really stretch out in sound design, specifically with the first-person shooter and weapons, and focusing a lot on the weapon design. Those games were really some of the earlier games in the kind of first-person shooter era that really had an eye toward or ear toward authenticity. So, like, you know, the World War II era weapons are, you know, really specific, and people care a lot about the authenticity. So getting out there and recording, you know, each weapon individually and putting them into the game was a real fun task that even in the earlier work that I'd done for film, we didn't get to go into that kind of detail. After that, I moved over to, it was about 2001, moved over to work with a company called Spark, and we did the first console Call of Duty game, and I was also did the final remix of and a bunch of assets for the first PC Call of Duty game, and those two were like a nice extension of the Medal of Honor franchise in terms of the attention to detail and the authenticity, and then stayed at Spark for the next 6 years. And we released a couple other games that didn't get a whole lot of fanfare, unfortunately. They're good games, though. Started working here at Crystal about a year and a half ago, and have worked exclusively on Tomb Raider since as a senior sound designer and now lead sound designer. And so the responsibilities or the goals for me are to look after kind of the overall creative direction of the audio and to make sure that we have kind of a consistent voice through some of the sound design and sound effects and hang out with these guys.
Well, I know that you said that authenticity was really important, especially with the Medal of Honor games and Call of Duty. So we'll come back to that in a second, because I know that authenticity is definitely a goal with Tomb Raider. I'm interested in, though, how do the three of you guys work together today? I know you have your little offices in a row, and they're each, like, soundproof and all that. But, like, what is a day like for the three of you? What do you work on? Do you have specific tracks or areas of expertise, or do you all just kind of work on one area together? Or how does that work, that dynamic?
It's kind of ideal if we can all work on one area together. Because then we can all each of us will focus on a certain area. Alex tends to focus on the music, and then I'll focus on mostly sound effects implementation, and then a little bit of music tuning if necessary. And then Jack creates the assets for us, and also we all try and do reviews together. When we're all focusing on the same area, it's the best. Otherwise,
because it helps ensure that consistency and that there's that same voice.
Yeah, and also then everyone knows what you're talking about. If you're looking in the immediate same area, then there's not really any question about what the other guy's doing. It's all, everyone's focusing on the same area.
Yeah. So kind of a built-in efficiency if we're all talking about the same thing at the same time. You know, if it gets to be a little bit less, it's actually a lot more fun when we're working together and kind of seeing immediate progress from someone else in the same level that we're working on. And that, even just the motivation, the inspiration that comes from new work and really good work, is actually one of the things that makes us work more efficiently and have a lot more fun in the process.
Well, Carl mentioned that you actually are creating some of the sounds. Does that mean that Foley artist is like the people you picture in like old plays and stuff where they sit there and they make the sounds off stage and that? Is that something that you guys still do and implement, or do you get most of your audio sounds from archives or libraries available online or that you resource, or how do you actually create these sounds that you implement in the game?
We do a kind of a mix of whatever is most appropriate and whatever we can do most efficiently to start. Typically what I like to do is get to have assets available, to make assets available as quickly as possible so that we can get stuff into the game so that, there's an opportunity to evaluate the characters or the objects or whatever doing something. And then along the way, make notes of what needs to be what needs to be improved, what needs to be redone. And when the window of time comes up to actually do that rework, it often is something that we would record, you know, a small object or footsteps or whatever in the booth or out in the field. Or sometimes the objects have been, or the materials that we'd be using have, you know, there's plenty of available assets or available sources that we can pull from to make the, to make it all sound right. So it's a mixture. I think it's in the most ideal case we would record everything from scratch and every sound would be completely brand new to the title. That just in terms of in practical terms, it's rare to be able to pull that off. But the more signature kind of sounds in the game are going to always get the most attention, and that often requires, you know, brand new recordings and that sort of thing.
So where do you go to get these recordings? Do you, when you're doing them yourself, do you actually go out and hunt out certain sounds, or like for gunfire, would you actually go to a range and shoot that gun, or how authentic? Because we were talking about how authenticity is very, very important for Tomb Raider. You want everything to feel rooted in reality and not necessarily, I don't know, kind of this weird ambience, I suppose.
Yeah, there's the for weapons specifically. We would it's still early enough in production that we haven't done that, and largely because the weapon choices are still in flux. Like we don't actually know what model each weapon is going to be yet. So when that gets more solid, a good kind of practice for weapon recording is to get as many of the weapons as you can that are closest to those that you want to use, and find an outdoor range that has enough space to line up 20 different microphones and different proximity to the weapon, and start firing. And a mixture of blanks and live rounds, they sound different and they have different qualities to them. And it mixing those together and making, you know, finding the right balance for the actual in-game sounds is a long task, but it's huge fun once we get that stuff back into the studio.
I can imagine field trips out and about. Do you guys have any interesting stories? I know that Alex, you had mentioned for the making of the trailer that you were sticking a microphone up in a vending machine to get the hum of a ship to kind of give that feel of the endurance. Do you guys have other stories like that?
I one place that I go to this scrapyard a lot, which has you know, everything from like toilets to bricks and glass windows, doors and cabinets and stuff like that. And you can just kind of go around and start making noises with these things with a portable microphone and then just kind of clean out the background noise later. So I've kind of found like you can go to one of those places and come back with hundreds of sounds.
And do you guys go hunting for these sounds sometimes and not necessarily know what you're going to use them for, but it's interesting? I would think that being an audio person, you guys would walk through life and like the way that artists look at something or photographers look at a scene, that you guys hear things and aren't constantly inspired by what you hear.
I've done that and kind of gone, oh, that's an interesting sound, and recorded it and then just never used it and kind of also lost it. but sometimes you even when you sort of keep it and categorize it, then you don't ever find a purpose for it. I find it's much more useful to know exactly what you're working on and have a very clear idea of what the perfect sound would be in your head and then go and try and find it. Because that's often the easiest way to get the best sound is to really find the sound and record it yourself. And that's something that I think for like young filmmakers and young sound designers and stuff, I think you can have a tendency to rely too heavily on library sounds and think, oh, I'm never going to find the perfect sound for this thing. And you know, my library sucks, and you know, my school only gives us like this really old library, and I've heard all these sounds a million times in movies. But actually, if you spend the money to buy a portable recorder and you just go out and record the sound yourself, you get the quality is so much better than anything you'll even get in really top libraries. Anyway,
and then you get exactly what you want, the speed you want, and all that.
I found what Alex is saying, like going around and having the recorder in hand and recording stuff and cataloging and then losing it later. And I found earlier in my career I was doing that a lot, where I was always had the recorder with me, and a lot of it was the idea that you know, whatever moment this is now, it will never come again, so I need to make sure that I capture it and, you know, have some way to refer back to it in terms of, you know, recapturing that sound. But, you know, also, as Alex said, you know, over the years, it's become a lot more efficient to just, you know, wait till I see it in the game, wait till it works in the game, wait till I see exactly how it's going to function, and then go and make the right recordings. Or if there's something in the library that's already done and works and isn't too recognizable as something that is in every other movie or every other game, then that's a good way to go too. I remember the first jobs I had with that old sound design house. It was really low budget, and we only had a handful of libraries to actually choose from, and we always used to kind of joke with each other that we would do those crazy things and combining sounds that you know you wouldn't expect, to, you know, put the lions into the lion roars into the car exhaust kind of things to make the car sound meaner and all that sort of thing, and a good chunk of our attitude was to be like, you know, the MacGyvers of sound design, because, you know, we didn't actually have all the tools to do it. You know, we didn't have a big budget studio to record whatever we wanted or to go on big field recording events. So combining a bunch of stuff that, you know, that isn't necessarily related to the object is a real fun and interesting way to go when you don't have the resources. But I think in a game like Tomb Raider, we have enough of a resource base and enough of an attitude towards getting something authentic that actually getting the right sound for the particular object is more appropriate than to combine all a bunch of the crazy things.
Other than authenticity, what do you think the motto is for Tomb Raider's sound design? Is there a specific, like, theme or inspiration or mood or tone you're trying to set in the game from an audio standpoint?
I like to think of dynamics as a big part of it. Like, you know, I want the subtle parts of the game to be really subtle. I want the exciting parts to be, you know, massive. You can only go so far because you don't want the player to constantly riding the volume knob on their TV. But I think there's something like really exciting when there's clear dynamics in games, and it's not as prevalent in games to have like a really clean, clear dynamic separation. Usually things are pretty loud all the time. Mm-hmm. I think we're trying to do that a lot, especially with the mixing some of the music in there, the way the ambiences play with the characters' Foley sounds. I think we're trying to keep some layer of subtlety so that when the big things come in, they really punch.
I also think the keeping things sounding more real than video games typically do is kind of also a direction that we're going, because something I learned when I was working in documentaries was that when you have a really kind of serious moment, if when you're treating it with sound, if you don't do it exactly how it would sound if you were there, and make it seem any way unreal, it kind of took away from the impact of what was happening and kind of made you feel more confident as a audience member that what was happening wasn't actually real and that you didn't have to worry about it. But if it sounded exactly as it would sound if you were there, there was something absolutely terrifying about the reality of it. And I think that's something that certainly I've tried to preserve when I do my work in this. And also, you know, you either do that or you just do no sound. That's kind of been the philosophy.
Go big or go home. Well, one example of the authenticity I remember from when I went and sat in when you guys were mixing the final trailer, the Turning Point trailer, and I remember there was one point where the camera pans from being under in like that porthole area that's being flooded as Lara's like banging on the porthole and yelling, and the camera goes from being inside that space with her to being outside looking through the window at her, and like you know, you caught that, Alex, that there was like a little bit of audio that needed to change that was, you know, it would be more echoey when it was in there with her versus when you're looking through it, it would sound slightly distant. And like that kind of attention to the to detail is definitely something that I'm starting to see throughout the games. That's very cool. Just go on a little rant. I held on to that because I thought that was super cool. It's also my second day on the job. So I was just like, oh, this is so amazing. Look at how this works.
Reverb can be really important in kind of grounding an area. Like ambience is one thing, but having reverb will tell you how big a space is. And that your ears will listen to that. And subconsciously, you're listening for it to see what kind of an area you're in, if there's a wall nearby or whatever. And if you get that right, it really does wonders.
Great. We've yet to announce the composer for the game,
yeah,
which I'm really excited when we do get to talk about him or her. So what capacity, obviously, you guys are working with that individual right now. What capacity do you guys work with that individual now to start getting, you know, music dynamically worked into the game? Is it still kind of the early stages? Are you working with that person very regularly or?
Well, I think probably Alex and I can both talk to this in different ways. The last several months has been spent with lots of feedback and lots of back and forth work towards really establishing our themes and the overall music. Like we're doing this this overture for the entire game, where we're taking kind of an outline of the narrative structure. And having our composer create different, you know, themes and textures that would range, you know, and span the entire game, and that gives us a going back and forth on that gets us to making early decisions on instrumentation, and early decisions on themes and how we would actually treat some of these areas, even before the levels are built and that sort of thing, and we're at the kind of closing up stage of that and moving towards the stage of actually building the in-game music, but that process of creating the overture has been a couple months in the works, and has required, you know, of me and of Alex as well, you know, several hours a week of just, you know, back and forth phone conversations and testing things out and trying a whole lot of different experimental ideas with the music and it's really an invigorating process to be working that closely with the composer and Alex right now is working more on the in-game stuff.
Yeah, right now what we're working on is combat music and trying to figure out what, you know, how, not so much a sort of system for it, but how we're going to approach that in the game in general. One of the things for me personally, in video games, I've always been frustrated with how music works, and you can almost hear the gears churning in the music system. And there's also been a lot of it seems like a lot of influence from the composer in terms of the musical structure and in how the music adapts to what's happening. In other words, the music will be delayed. Let's say you go from combat to, you know, an idle state. The music will be delayed because it doesn't make sort of musical sense to change at that moment, and so what we want, the direction that we want to take is really to just score the game emotionally so that it reacts instantly to what happens in the game, so that you never hear that delay, or you never really hear the music working. That it's just,
you can't see the systems or see the man behind the curtain. It just feels organic.
Yeah, and both Jack and I have you know, backgrounds in music, so we really understand how to compose, and I think that gives us an advantage in sort of working with the composer, that we can direct him in a way that it's like, you know, give us all these little elements, and then we can build the score ourselves within the game.
Great. That's very interesting. I know we have a lot of fans. We actually have one blog that's just dedicated to the music of Tomb Raider, and I know everybody's really excited to finally find out who the composer is and all that. I have two less than serious questions that I want to end off with. One, do any of you guys actually have training in voice acting? Because fans may not know this, but you guys do a lot of temporary VO, including temp VO for Lara. So in sometimes we'll be seeing the game and this man's voice will come out of her. And sometimes you guys do, I mean, you guys do a pretty good job. So anybody actually had some voice acting or VO training?
Nope.
You just throw yourself in it?
No training, no. I've been, some of the earlier jobs I had was as a VO recordist and for recording ADR to film, and have since done lots of VO directing and recording and directed actors and things like that. So I'm really familiar and comfortable with the recording process for VO, and often just quickly just go in there and
jump in there.
It does sound a little weird when Lara is talking to somebody else and it turns out to be the same guy's voice back and forth. But
the point is implementing it that early is just to make sure the dialogue is right and the timing is right and all that, correct?
Yeah. The last thing we want to do is have any other departments waiting on us. And oftentimes just recording myself is the quickest way to get the sound ready for the designers as soon as possible. And what I haven't, the next phase of that would be also to then replace that with either the final actors or with more gender appropriate temp recordings. But that it's harder to schedule and maneuver around that sort of thing. But no training. But it's just fun to get in there and yell it.
I think also because you're an audio guy, people have an expectation that you may be good at this or should be good at this. And so therefore you just kind of throw yourself into it much more than I think you would if you were doing any other job. So maybe it sounds a little better than an artist to doing it. But I have the same question for you. Do you have, because for our temp Lara, you've been pretty good. And
I've done a couple, although I absolutely refuse to try an accent. I just keep saying that she's now from the Midwest because I'm not gonna butcher that. But it is kind of scary. Like I was like, oh, this is exciting, and then I got in there and I actually had a little pit in my stomach.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's just me and this microphone in this really quiet room, and I've got to yell and throw in all this enthusiasm or fear or whatever. And it's actually, I have a lot of respect for voice actors.
Yeah, one of the things I find when people go into a booth for the first time that they've never. One of the things I often find is that people will speak a lot softer than they would even just talking to a person in a normal room. But even so much as most of the lines in a game like this are going to be under all kinds of stress and fear, and you're going to be yelling 20, 30 yards to get someone's attention, and often that's the thing that stumbles novice actors the most is just
projecting,
yeah, just saying it like saying it as if you're really trying to get someone's attention. So
all right, my last less than serious question is for Carl. Why do you have stuffed monkeys all over your room? I'll put a picture on the blog so you guys can see what I'm talking about.
So there's a site called woot.com and they sell like an item every day. And so I'd frequently be watching that site. And then when they sell through an item that day, you have to wait until the next day before they'll sell the next whatever it is. Usually it's like electronic gadgets and stuff. And then they'll have what's called a woot-off. And that basically means they sell through all the various things that didn't get sold on the previous days. And somewhere in the middle of that will be monkeys. And one time I was like, monkeys? They're like, I think, $2 or $3, $4 a piece. Fuck it, I'll get three of them.
Okay.
Great. And so I got three of them. I was like, well, why not? The shipping's $5 for three or one. I'll get three of them. And then they come up again like a month later and I said, why not?
More.
And then it became a habit.
And they make noise.
Yeah, if they, so they have little rubber band arms so you can fling them at people or walls.
Yeah, it's like there's nobody in there with you. Just aim out the door as people walk by.
Yeah, I haven't done that yet, but when they hit things, they scream.
You hit me with it.
Oh. I've done it a couple times.
Well, I will definitely, I'll share pictures because it's kind of funny. I, for a moment, I wondered if it had anything to do with like the acoustics of the room or if like he was just putting all this fluffy stuff up on the walls for some reason.
Well, if there's ever an earthquake, they may all scream at once.
It's an earthquake detection system.
Yeah. Right. We'll all 5 minutes before the earthquake, the stuffed monkeys are all screaming. So
everybody knows
to run. That's her.
Yeah, people are watching their chandeliers and I'm listening to my monkeys.
Carl is back with 5 new questions that we're going to ask him. Your most pressing questions of the month, the ones that I hear over and over again.
Awesome.
And I don't say that with disdain. I appreciate these questions. That's why I want to answer them. That's why I corner Carl.
Yeah, but last ones were easy. These ones I can already sense are going to be a bit harder. No, they won't. They'll be good. And the funny thing is, by the time everybody listens to this, we've just come back off of a long, long trip on the road. And already before I go, my throat is killing me. So that doesn't bode well.
We're recording this one almost, 30 days in advance?
30 days in advance.
Brent, Carl, and I will be traveling all over the world. I'll be doing, I'll be in Spain, UK, France, Germany, New York. Where will you be, Carl? You guys have exotic locations.
Yeah, Brent is going to Johannesburg to present in South Africa, and I am off to Moscow, sunny Birmingham, for all you Brummies who are listening. I am so looking forward to going back up to Birmingham. I haven't been there in years. If you ever get a chance, Megan, it is a very unique place to go and play.
I would like to go.
Yes,
we
it's good.
Make this happen.
It's good for Indian food. I love Indian food from Birmingham. And if anybody has any good recommendations, certainly fire them my way because I'm always looking for somewhere good. Yeah, but I got to go to Moscow. I got to go to Birmingham, and I've got a ton of meetings in London, which London to me feels like it's
like
just
a home.
Yeah, like I leave. You know, my next week I'm leaving at 7 o'clock in the afternoon. I land at lunchtime on Tuesday. I work Wednesday and I get in a plane and come home Thursday.
Yep.
Like that is literally, I do 36 plus hours.
That sounds
in the
like
UK.
A trip to Japan I once took.
Yeah. Remember that one?
Came there one day, stayed for 24 hours, turned around.
Came back.
Just as much time on the plane as I did in the country. Exactly. Anyway, off topic.
Yeah, we digress.
Question one is actually, I think, fairly simple. Will Lara need food, water, and shelter in her new adventure?
Yes, because she's not a robot. She will definitely need it. We're actually deep in that right now as to how much health. We're kind of doing that fine-tuning as we speak on some of our levels of how much water, how much food, how long can she go before, you know, consciously you're like, I'd be starving by now.
Mm-hmm.
and obviously what it means to collect as well. So, yes, it plays a big part. I'm not going to spoil it by going into any of the details because it obviously is a big part. But one of the things we've said in the past and we'll continue to say is that this is not a sim game. We're not going to be picking berries and drinking our own wee just to be able to survive. There will be a sense of realism. She will have to scavenge food and find it to keep herself going and obviously keep her health up. So, yes, there will be a sense of realism in that you do need to eat and you do need to drink.
Question number two. This one might be a little harder.
Oh, Jesus.
How applicable is the term survival horror to the game? Many have heard the term used by the press and are curious as to how accurate it is.
It's funny you say it's something that's been used by the press because it's something that we've said we're not trying to be a survival horror game. So
I
maybe
know, that's
why
I want to clarify.
Maybe the press are the
internally.
Ones that go, whoa, it's like a survival horror. Obviously, people have only seen so much of the game up till now and there is a sense of, you know, horror to it. To us, horror, you know, it will be horrifying because you're coming across people and instances and a world in which, you know, is completely unfamiliar to you. So it will be horrifying. And the situation she'll find herself in, you know, you'll have to fight to get out of and fight to survive. But it's more survival adventure. You know, we're still adventurers, right? Lara Croft is still going to be a treasure hunter, adventurer, looking for something new. And, you know, sometimes she comes across things that are going to frighten the living crap out of her.
And that would frighten the living crap out of pretty much anyone in her situation.
Exactly, yeah. So we're not purposely... The good answer to your question is we're not purposely going out to make a survival horror game. We are not going out to make, you know, what is the one that pops into my head? Condemned?
You Silent know, Hill.
Silent Hill. We're not
Early
that.
Resident Evil.
Yeah, we're not... Condemned comes to mind because I love that box art with the eye looking through the door. Was that from that
one?
That was creepy as hell. I know the person who did that. It's cool. So we're not trying to create a Res Evil Silent Hill type game. It's still going to be very much a Tomb Raider, Lara Croft game. It's going to have all the sort of the history associated to it in that way, in that Lara is an adventurer and there won't be any desire to go out and shoot any zombies.
Good to know. Question three.
No undead people. Yet. I say that because I've got so many good ideas in my head. It's just whether or not I can get anybody to say yes to them.
All right, question three. In the making of the Turning Point feature, Carl mentioned that the trailer was cut down. Is there any chance of seeing all that extra footage?
Yeah, it was actually cut down. I think the original... Well, there's two parts to that. Is that if I had gotten my way from day one, what I pitched to Visual Works, my idea from my head in one of our first brainstorming meetings was about 8 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And I had Lara walking up to the ship and saying hello to Roth and boarding and putting her bag in her room and going for dinner and meeting people around the table. And they looked at me like I'd got six heads and went, "You're off your freaking trolley." So... The final trailer that I ended up with was about 4 minutes, 10 seconds. So, you know, give or take some bits and pieces. There's probably about a minute left on the cutting room floor. I would love to think that we'd put it all together someday, but the way in which I built out the trailer with the guys from Visual Works is that it's not that we left scenes on the floor. It's the fact that we were looking to get a certain level of emotion from situations. So, for instance, where she's nearly drowning in the escape hatch, in order to get that moment and to get that sense that she's, in her last few seconds of life, you have to shoot it from many different angles. So we did a lot of capturing. So we basically captured an entire scene from inside the escape hatch and then the entire scene from outside the escape hatch looking down. Mm-hmm. So what happens is that you get the pros, sit down then and start editing it all together to try and find the perfect second and the perfect cut to lead into the next one. So a lot of the stuff that's left on the cutting room floor is not necessarily stuff that we could just bolt onto the end of it to say, hey, here's the extended version. We specifically went in I specifically went in with moments I wanted to capture in each scene, and in order to get them, I had the guys work on them from maybe two or three different angles. So, you know, there might be a time when I'll review it and go, hey, you know, if it's unfinished, then it depends on the quality of it. But yeah, there was actually, let me think, there's a piece where pulls her out of the escape hatch, saves her life, and then she gets up and runs and then stumbles and then looks up at Roth and then runs to Roth. And I think what we did, just in the interest of continuity and timing, was you never see her standing up and running and stumbling the first time. You just see the moment that when he pulls her out, she looks up at Roth. So there's kind of pieces that just, we worked on them for so long and I really thought they were strong pieces. But when we start editing it together, you'd be amazed at how many pieces you go, that section doesn't make sense now. It kind of keeps the vibe and the trend and timing going if you just cut that out.
I think you just debuted a new character.
All right, well,
are we going to edit that out? Do you want me to bleep it out and just leave this in and then make all the...
Bleep that in, and everybody, when you hear the bleep, you didn't hear the name that I just said.
We'll make them mad. Oh, man.
Okay. I was wondering why you were holding your mouth. You were like, oh, shit.
I was laughing. All right.
Good you caught that before we ever sent this out. Wow.
All right, question number four.
See, it's because it's like I'm just sitting here talking to you. Are you forgetting that
you don't see the invisible crowd?
The invisible crowd of people listening.
When we're talking, I picture the forums. I just picture them in my head, threads expanding.
Okay, well, everybody at least now knows that there's an important character that we just bleeped.
Okay, question number four. And forgive me, I'm not sure if we talked, I think we might have talked lightly about this at one of the E3 podcasts, but a lot of people are still wondering, is the cinematic and CG style use in the trailer reserved only for the trailers, or will we see any of that in-game? Basically, will cut scenes be in-game or pre-rendered?
No, the pre-rendered work that we did with Visual Works was a one-off. It was just purely because we were trying to tell an aspect of a story. Everything in-game will be using the Crystal Engine, and it'll be all rendered cinematics using that.
Which the Crystal Engine is quite impressive.
Well, everything that you've seen up until now, in terms of gameplay, cutting to and fro cinematics, is all engine. We haven't pre-rendered anything, and we'd love to try and keep that way. But what that means, though, is that it's not we sit here on our own in the studio making every single cinematic. You know, we'll give our engine to you know, a company we're working with, and they will work with mocapping and capturing VO and doing all that stuff, and then they'll go in and help build our cinematic. So it's not like, you know, we're gonna take on every single cinematic ourselves. We have partners out there who will use our engine. So you're still getting the world's best people working on it. You know, there's a company down in LA we're working with right now who did the original cinematics that you've seen from the Wolf scene. At you know, they worked on Avatar and they're doing some work on Hitman. Those guys are phenomenal. But we basically give them a portion of our engine for them to be able to render it using our engine and then send it back, and we implement it in the game. So. Yeah, so everything will be using the Crystal engine. Did I give anything away there that I shouldn't have?
No, I think that was a safe one.
Just give me the evil eye now, everybody.
Last question. How close to finish is Lara's model that was shown off at E3?
At the time, because obviously we have so much time before the game comes out, once we reach kind of alpha, which is actually very soon, the final model has to be locked. As we had gotten into E3, she was probably 70%. We've continued to work on her. The face of Lara and the clothing of Lara, they're all locked. That won't change. But how her hair moves, how her dirt and how kind of the water affects her, all of that stuff was still in flux because the game is very systemic in that obviously as she plays through and she gets wet, it'll rub the dirt off. Certain dirts are going to be oil. They're going to stay there longer. Even if water hits it, certain muds will dry in and change color. The combination of sun hitting mud will change that to a lighter mud versus when it gets wet, it'll get darker. So there's thousands of combinations. And the models that we've been running through to try and get that look and feel for each scene, that stuff will come after we start getting into the nuts and bolts, you know, post alpha into beta phase. But right now, the look and feel of the model and you know, the sort of characteristics of her, they're all locked now. That she won't change. You won't see a blonde haired Lara Croft appear the next time we show the game. But certainly, you know, she was even in the demo, she was probably a little bit more dirty and covered in blood than she is now when we fine tune it. But at the time, that looked awesome. But now, when you start getting deep into the rest of the game, you want to start pulling back on certain areas.
Great. I think the fans are going to find this a very successful take five.
Yeah, this feels like I've talked to... Your questions are like five words, and I've just gone on 105 words, so that's good.
It's supposed to be. I have to talk to the rest of the podcast, so...
Excellent. All right, well, I'm going to rest my voice now so that I can get ready to talk to the... I think I've got to present to... I think I'm up on stage to talk to like 2,500 people at one time, which is going to be funny.
Good luck.
And for anybody who's listening to this... Shout out the crowd. Actually, I'll be back.
You'll be back by then.
Duh.
Well, hopefully you'll just be so enthusiastic that they'll shout out anyway.
I need to plan that. I need to make sure that there's anybody from... like, I did the Batman GameStop Manager show. GameStop Manager show for Batman, I should say. And I got up in front of 5,000 people, and I shouted out from my store close by.
Which oh,
I'm
cool.
Not gonna, I'm not going to say where my store is because people know where I live. But... I need to make sure that when we do podcasts before I go to shows, I tell people to scream out in the audience because that would be awesome. I will give you a shout out and take a photograph of you. Tell everybody that you did it.
We'll work on that in the future. All right. Awesome. Well, all right. Thanks for joining me.
No problem. Thank you very much. Good questions, people. Keep them coming. Still a bit of time left and I'll keep answering them. And if I find a question that I don't like, I will just say no comment.
That's it for this episode, other than one little piece of house cleaning, which is the... details, the final question for the Xbox 360 branded giveaway. So by now you should have received the first questions via Facebook and Twitter. And what you need to do is enter all three answers into the appropriate fields at tombraider.com/podcast. Couple of tips, make sure you use the correct spelling, include your full name and email address. And the contest is also only open to those who are 18 plus. Also, because we'll be custom skinning the Xbox after the winner isn't announced so that we can properly ensure it's the right 360 for their territory, it'll take 6 to 7 weeks for the final delivery of the product, but I promise it is worth the wait. The winner will be announced through the blog, the official Tomb Raider blog, within a week of the contest closure. So, the final question is... Terry Sheridan is a character from what entertainment installment of the Tomb Raider franchise? A tip, make sure to use the proper full title. As a hint, it should be 8 words. Thank you so much.